Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
And we are back for episode 36 of Digital Divination.
Well, you must mean 35, right? Because I don't think I recorded 35.
Oh, no. I was doing a test run with my new co-host. So I now have my guest co-host, Ron Lundeen.
I knew it. I knew I'd be replaced if I left. And look at that. I listened to the episode last time. It was really good, and Jake really knows his comic stuff very well.
Yes, I know. You know, I'm thinking I know a little bit about comics, and it's like, no, I don't.
Well, and he especially goes right into the sort of the professorial mode, and I'm like, dang it, why didn't I know he was teaching comics back when he was teaching comics, and I could have taken a class from him? That would be so interesting.
No, I'm thinking, why didn't I know that I could get a PhD in comics, and why didn't I do that?
You know? I did take a graphics novel class actually in college, and that was super interesting. But no, not with any kind of the specificity that he had. Woo.
Yeah, no, it was really enjoyable, and I gotta say, I figured if I got him started talking on comics, we would talk a bit about them. And unfortunately, I think we really dominated. I haven't gone back to listen to it after I edit it, but I'm fairly certain it is majority comics.
But it's a lot of Starfinder too, right? His perspective on being a Starfinder developer and what makes a good Starfinder class is really interesting, I thought.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it, and you know, hopefully we got enough there. But hey, you've been gone all this time. How are you doing?
I have been traveling to parts of the country where the Delta variant is raging and nobody seems to care. So when I got back, we cut our vacation just a little bit short, and when I got back and I started to have a sore throat and serious congestion and a fever. Oh my goodness, was I worried. Speaking as one dad to another, I was actually kind of pleased that it was me that got sick and not my kids, right? Because that's so much worse to have sick kids. But I hauled us all into the urgent care after the requisite amount of waiting time for a COVID test, and we all came back negative. So it was just a standard cold, not at all a pleasant one. I'd almost forgotten that they existed. But apart from that, it was really good to see family we hadn't seen in a little while. And it's nice to know that we're able to settle back in safely with the negative test. That's actually been really comforting. So it was good. It was a good road trip.
Yeah. How'd your kids like going back? And have they been to Utah before?
They have. We go a couple times a year, actually, to go visit family there. And it's part of the thing that was really hard about it is my oldest was really looking forward to seeing a cousin who had COVID, who had gotten COVID while we were on our way there. And so she was in isolation and couldn't see anybody. And that was really kind of a shame. We thought briefly about driving by so that we could wave to her from her bedroom window. And I wondered whether that would actually be worse, right, than not seeing her, that she could only see us from a distance. But we'll be back there again, you know, when things start to settle down. I'm sure we'll be back several times. So we just have to tough it out through this this rough patch here.
Yeah, it was looking in June like things were, you know, making a turn for the better. And now it's like, well, here we go again.
Yeah, you know? I know. Same old thing all over again. How about you? Canadian borders open, I hear.
Well, tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow it opens up for Americans to go in. And the reason why that's relevant, the reason why we're talking about it is my daughter came home yesterday from Canada. So she was been going to school in Calgary. and she's starting up for a grad school program in University of British Columbia, up close to home here, about 2 hour drive. And now she'll be able to go up, and we'll be able to go up with her this week to go find an apartment and get her moved in and everything.
Oh, that'll and be so nice.
Yeah, so that'll be good. The interesting thing is they have some very specific requirements. So you have to, within 72 hours, you have to take a COVID test and have it come back negative within 72 hours of crossing the border. And you also have to be fully vaccinated so you don't quarantine when you're there. And you have to have a quarantining plan in case something happens. So they have a lot of complexity for doing it, because they apparently are really worried about this Delta variant we have. And you know, the number of cases they have, like, in the whole country is like less than like what we have like in one state.
And oh my goodness.
Yeah, and they're like, they want to keep it that way.
I don't blame them. I don't blame them one bit.
Yeah. But it's exciting, you know, to have her back, and because we haven't seen her. She was back last year to be a caretaker for me, actually, when I was recovering from my transplant. And that's the last time we've seen her. So,
oh, wow. So she was able to cross because she was a caretaker for somebody that had a serious procedure.
Right.
Oh,
she could cross for that and then go back. The problem going to Vancouver and kind of looking for a place and all that, she could do that. The problem is she's got two cats and she didn't want to have to bring them there, bring them back with all their stuff. So she's brought her cats to stay with us. So she finds a place, then she'll pick them up because it's only a short drive going up.
I see. That makes sense. Well, and that's good to be able to help out, right? Doing what you can to help from this side of the border.
Well, you know, she's all grown up and has it all figured out now. So whatever we can do, you know, we're happy to help out. It's not like when they're teenagers or whatever and they need all kinds of help. It's like, come on, Dad, I'm an adult. I don't need that anymore kind of thing now.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, I get that all the time. All the time. But, you know, it comes with a territory.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that's been neat, and so since you've been back, we actually were able to get our session zero for Intrepid Heroes last week, which I thought was a lot of fun.
That was great. It was so great to see people in person and sort of have the dice there on the table. And yeah, it was really good. I hadn't realized how much I'd missed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Mark said afterwards, he was like, "You're euphoric." It's like, yeah. I think that describes it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't cry or anything, but I kind of felt like it.
Yeah, everybody was, we had played a couple times with my other local group before that, but I didn't realize how much I missed all you guys, because we've been playing together. I've been playing together with you all longer than those other folks. So it's like, even though we've been talking, you know, every week, every other week online, it's not quite the same as being all in the same room and talking and making jokes and doing all that again, you know?
Absolutely agree. It was really good.
Well, you know, you've been gone and we've completely rearranged the show now. So
we're going to talk about Starfinder for a change?
Yeah, it's going to be a much more serious look at things. We're going to, and I don't know, we're going to do whatever.
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
I do have to say it was interesting because I thought, like you, I thought, and here we go. This is the thrust of the show. We're going to be talking about the new playtest evolutionist class. It was interesting to hear last week Jake talk about what goes mm-hmm. into making a Starfinder class, and even talked mm-hmm. a little bit about the evolutionist mm-hmm. when I hadn't seen it yet. And that let me realize, wait a minute, this isn't going to be the class that I thought it was going to be.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually what I kind of wanted to talk about. You know, when I was talking with Jake, it was right before Jason Tondreau, also known as Jake. When we were talking last week, it was right before the Evolutionist was being released. So I hadn't seen it, and he was familiar with it, but he obviously couldn't talk about it yet. But the kind of core question of, you know, how do you come up with a class and, you know, what are some of the parameters, I thought was very interesting to talk about. And now, having seen the Evolutionist, it kind of makes sense with that, but now I'm not quite sure, you know.
How do you mean?
Well, so, you know, we have the three new classes coming out in this group, right? We have the Nanocyte, we have the Evolutionist here, and we have the other one that I can't remember right offhand.
The Precog.
The Precog, right.
Yeah.
So the Precog is a caster type, right?
Yeah, absolutely it is, yep.
Right. The Nanocyte is, how would you characterize that?
Gosh, I guess that's the tech trickster type.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I might describe it, right?
Kind of
the kind of person drawn to a Nanocyte is going to be the kind of person that is, one, I want to use tech to solve my problems, and two, I want to be able to solve a wide variety of problems.
Right. And then this one, you know, again, I'm looking at like when they introduced the Vanguard, the Biohacker, and the Witchwarper, you had kind of a mystical type, a tech utility, and a frontliner. So now we have the Precog is the mystical type. You have the Nanocyte is kind of the technical kind of utility skill thing. So the Evolutionist is going to be the frontliner?
The fighter type,
the
I guess.
The fighter type, yeah. The melee type. And when I look at it, on the surface, okay, you know, it has... It's, you know, main abilities can either be strength or dexterity, right? But
that's absolutely the case. But it's look a little closer. You see,
it's not full BAB, you know?
It is not. And it's actually got kind of low stamina and hit points. It's got the same stamina and hit points as an envoy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So and it doesn't get very heavy armor or very strong weapons.
Yeah, and I'm like, so it doesn't fit that mold, right? So, you know, what I'm thinking, you know, the Vanguard, okay, you know, lots of hit points, lots of stamina points, you know, can do lots of damage, and then maybe not so great on skills. And then I'm looking at this, and it's like, okay, so strength and dexterity, oh, but not so many hit points. And then it has this kind of skill stuff, but not a lot of skill ranks per level. It's not a full BAB class. And then it's got all this flexibility to kind of increase damage a little bit and do things. But it doesn't, I don't know what to make of it, I guess. You know?
Well, it is definitely more of a skills class than I thought. I looked at it and I thought, oh, well, it's got the stamina points and the hit points of an envoy, but it's got fewer class skill choices than an envoy does. And then when I actually looked at it, I'm like, oh no, actually there's kind of several different ways it gets more class skill. So it's actually it's kind of a skillsy class.
As you go up in level, right, you increase from four skill ranks per level to you get at ninth you get five, and at 17th you kind of get another.
Right,
so
your special ability you pick gives you one, and then you get to pick up another one at first. So you kind of start with six, kind of, and then, you know, get seven, eight. You'll get up there. Here's when I started to look about their adaptive weapon, their key ability that lets them pick a type of weapon that they can attack with, and it does not terrible damage, and the damage scales up as they go up in level.
Right.
And they don't have a full BAB, and they're not super durable, but they're kind of skillsy, and the way they're skillsy is with athletic types of skills. I realized I'm looking at the Starfinder Monk.
Oh, interesting.
That's what this looks like to me, is the Starfinder Monk.
Okay. That I guess that kind of makes sense. And then you can take a couple different flavors of your monk, kind of a more mystical monk, kind of mystical, magical kind of monk, this kind of undead kind of monk.
Kind of a robo monk
And then a kind of a mechanized monk, right? So, oh, and then a vital, right?
Bio monk, maybe.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. So I hadn't thought about, because when I think of monks, I often think of combination attacks and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also, the thing that I'll tell you, what I expected from the class. As soon as I heard Evolutionist, I thought, this is great. This is somebody who's going to be able to be particularly flexible in combat the way the Nanocyte is, but to be flexible in the way they attack. So I thought this is going to be the equivalent of the Pathfinder. One of the last Pathfinder first edition classes that came out was called the Shifter. This is going to be the Shifter for Starfinder. This is going to be, you change parts of your body, you evolve parts of your body into things, and then you pull them back and so on. So I expected this to be more like the Starfinder equivalent of the Shifter. And when I saw it was a Starfinder equivalent of the Monk, that really surprised me. And I don't know that I necessarily say it disappointed me, but it wasn't what I was expecting, I gotta say.
Well, you know, the Eldritch kind of niche is what they call it. Mm-hmm. You know, at 20th level, they do, their creature type does become some kind of fantastical or extraplanar being. In this case, you get to choose between a dragon, fey, or outsider. But it's not like a temporary shift for what's happening. That's just what you become. That's what you evolve into, you know?
Yeah, you just are that from then on. Yeah.
So that's almost more what this thing's all about, is that you start at one point and then you have some endpoint in your body, and adaptations are working towards that over time, and you get special abilities related to that evolution rather than being adaptive in every instance, which is kind of a little bit more what the nanocyte's about, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you play a very aggressive combat focused nanocyte, maybe you do that. Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing that I don't see is, you know, this, well, first of all, if at 20th level you become the creature, that almost seems, you know, like here you can become undead, you can become a dragon, you know, you can become, what's the vital become?
A construct. Although you kind of become a little bit of construct even from the beginning.
Oh yeah, the mechanized one. I'm thinking the vital one. It's the last one here. You become an aberration, monstrous humanoid, ooze, or plant. That just doesn't excite me, as that's my end game.
No, I think you're absolutely correct, and I don't. 20th level abilities mean something, right? And the thing that they communicate is, here's what the class is striving for, even though, frankly, you know, practically speaking, you're never going to reach it, right? How many campaigns go to 20th level and play at 20th level a lot? You want the 20th level ability to be so cool, you're able to point at it and say, this is the thing that I am absolutely going to be able to do that is defining who I am and my path to get there. Mm-hmm. And I think it is kind of underwhelming on the evolutionist side.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there are some, you know, maybe, well, I don't know with these, I'm just thinking maybe they'll have, you know, some very specific types of end creatures that you can become, and those would be much more appealing. You know, if you're become a kaiju aberration, or I don't know what it would be.
I see what you're saying.
So if it's really a big deal and they're not really releasing that part, they're just saying that's what you're working towards, you know, maybe that's cooler. But I'm just thinking, as a player going through this, you know, I can regain my full BAB by spending some of these EPs, evolution points, not to be confused with entropy points.
Correct.
You know, and you can collect these and you can do some various things with it. You know, I'm not a huge fan of a secondary pool. You know, we already have resolve. But
and
I can
hit points and stamina and
so I can see it, you know. So like I have a 13th level Vanguard, which is fairly high. And honestly, there's a lot of stuff you can do with entropy points. I don't spend a lot of time doing them. You know, it has enough cool things without spending entropy points that I can do that I'm really happy with the class. You know, that's like gravy on top of it. Here, it's like the entropy points are a much more vital aspect of it. You know, and so maybe that's part of the shift, is that we want to have much more situational benefits for the class rather than having a really strong constant benefit with smaller situational things.
I wonder if you're onto something there, and I wonder if it isn't the case that they looked at some of the other classes that have pool points like the Vanguard and thought, well, people don't stay very invested in tracking and spending those. So let's make a class where, in fact, it is more important to be tracking and spending those, even if some of the ways that you track and spend them seem a little strange. Did you, maybe you can
clarify this for me. One of the abilities that they have for the ways they can spend their points, which frankly puzzled me, you can clear some sort of detriment that you have.
Oh, the drawbacks that you get. Is that what you're talking about?
Let me say, I not only say kind of, because I think that it is special, you know, when they talk about the different ways that you can spend your EPs, not what you get for having them, when you spend.
Right.
Once per round, you can spend evolution points with no effect to regain control of your body.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
What is that? What does that do, even?
So I was thinking this is like if you were under a charmed person or confused, or, you know, maybe that's what they're talking about.
That's what I thought, too. But they didn't. Then they don't go on to explain that.
Right. It's not called out specifically. And maybe that's just an editorial mistake that they, you know, that was like we're supposed to put the specifics underneath it. I don't know.
Well, that might be the case, but let me tell you, these are some super clever guys, so I wouldn't put it past them
to have thought, let's make a general statement about how you can regain control of your character. And when people ask, what does that actually mean? We say, what do you think that means?
Right.
That could be the case.
That'll probably come up in any pretest kind of survey response.
Yeah, that might be the case. I wouldn't put that past them. They're very clever about playtests.
By now, Paizo's done so many playtests that when it looks like we're doing something that is totally, you know, crazy and out there with a playtest, it almost certainly is done in a very calculated way, and it's intended to see what kind of reactions it provokes.
Well, and that would kind of make sense. If you look at the evolutionist table, you know, kind of the level-by-level table, their will save is the lowest of all the saves.
True.
So, you know, basically it's roughly half or slightly, it's roughly half of what the other saves are. So, you know, at 20th level, it's +6, where the other saves are +12.
Yeah, it's the bad save they get is their will. Yeah,
so maybe the expectation is that, you know, so like I have other characters, the will save is bad. So I, you know, get Iron Will and Improved Iron Will, hoping to take care of that. And so maybe this is like, oh, you know what? We're building something into your class that gives you a way to wipe out when you're stunned for the round and can't do anything, or you're been charmed and can't, you know, or you're fearful and have to run, you know. So any compulsory type of thing that's required on you, or, you know, inability to act kind of thing, you're staggered. So, you know, maybe all that is going to get clear. Who knows?
That's kind of brilliant, and I certainly hope that that's the case. I've long said that there's,
you know, you're making a decision when you play a character that is weak in fortitude, reflex, or will. Mm-hmm. And if your fortitude is weak, you're saying my character can die easier, just straight up die from stuff, from poisons or fortitude save effects, disintegration, and so on. If your reflex save is weak, what you're saying is I'm going to take more damage than other characters, because reflex save almost always is to reduce damage. And will save, if your will save is weak, you're saying I'm losing control of my character more often than other characters are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe it's exactly that. It's regaining the control that you lose for having a poor will save. It certainly does make my favorite of the niches even better, if that's the case, because I find some of the drawbacks to be, frankly, pretty crippling. And so part of my decision for what I would make is what's the least bad drawback. I'm kind of drawn to vital as the niche generally, but its drawback is take penalty to will saves. I'm like, man, my will saves would be terrible already anyway.
I got to do something to fix those. Yeah.
Yep. I could go ahead and drop those even further.
Now, this is an interesting question I have for you. This is the first character we have that has a, you know, rather than a dump stat, has like a whole dump feature, you know, a dump class feature, you know. Okay, you get all this other stuff, but man, you are going to really suck at this if you take this particular specialization.
Right, right. Yeah, if depending on the niche that you take, you're going to have a thing that is awful.
Right, and it's not, you know, catastrophically awful. It's like you take more, you know, of whatever it is, or you do worse more by, you know, one half of your evolutionist level. So,
right. You know. I would say there is one that is catastrophically awful, and that's Eldritch, because spell resistance is a huge drawback when it comes to players, because it means your friends can't heal you when you need healing. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to need healing, you're not going to want to wait for my turn, and then I'll take my turn to drop my spell resistance, and then you can hit me with the healing. I mean, when you need healing, you're going to need it right then, and spell resistance really gets in the way of that. Mm-hmm. So I saw that the Eldritch gave spell resistance and then called it a benefit. I'm like, nope, not for me.
Well, but remember, this is Starfinder, right?
Yeah, that's true. So you've got a lot of stamina enhancing or improving things that aren't magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but in terms of, you know, having to regain, you know, your point pools, most games that you're playing, until you get to the final boss, you're not dealing a lot with hit points. So in the general course of doing things, it's coming off of stamina, you get through and you rest and recover, you have an envoy, whatever it is. And even so, at a higher level, you know, so if you have this situation, you know, you stock up on healing serums, right? Stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's the way to mitigate it.
Yeah.
But it's something there.
Yeah, but in any case, it's just kind of interesting, though, the dynamic, you know, to have basically the first class that has a built-in drawback like that. And it makes me kind of wonder, is that something they're maybe looking at to help, you know, kind of strengthen some parts of a class without making it super powerful because it's got this weakness.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the case. It certainly is. There are a number of sort of hidden drawbacks for classes mm-hmm. that you got to think about, right? That you've got things you just can't do very well as your class. You're like, all right, well, I'm choosing to play a Solarian. All right, well, then your drawback, your hidden drawback is you are going to be terrible at any kind of at most kinds of skill checks, right?
Yes, that's just, yes.
It's, I mean, the fact you don't get many skill points means it's maybe not a hidden drawback, but it's certainly something that most people who play a Solarian for the first time don't realize till they're actually in play. Oh crap, there's a lot of this stuff I really can't do.
Yeah, and the fact that you are splitting your attribute pool three ways typically as well,
right?
You know,
right.
So on top of it. You know, it's kind of, whereas if you have somebody who is int-based, you know, so you have a int-based a biohacker or technomancer, right? Wow, they get skills out of the wazoo, you know?
Yep, yep.
But the thing I would say is, in that case, and actually in both those cases, they're not necessarily drawbacks, but they're more trade-offs.
Okay.
You know, so you can't do as much here. You're not very good here, but you'll be really strong there. This is just like, okay, here's what the class does. Oh, and if you take this flavor of class, this is what you're going to suck at. Like this is the thing that, you know, no matter what flavor you take, you're going to be bad at something. And it's not like a bad in game thing per se, but more if your main thing is getting in combat and doing damage, or, you know, if this is your attacker type, damage dealer type, as I'm thinking it should be, then this is your kryptonite. Right.
Yep,
what it seems like they're making here.
See, and we can make comic references too, John.
Yes, yes. But the thing is, I don't think that's a bad idea, but I don't think the Superman part is good enough.
That I think is a really good analogy. I feel like the drawback is positioned to be, all right, you're gonna get your niche and here's all your sort of instinct bonuses, and then here's your drawback. And it's sort of positioned to be the drawback is the thing that makes, it's bad, but it makes your instinct so awesome, right? Mm-hmm. don't know the instincts are that awesome. And I wonder whether or not the drawback maybe is better positioned as, look, considering all the other stuff you get, the drawback helps counteract some of the all the other awesome. But right. I don't know.
I'm just not feeling the awesome, I guess. And maybe, you know, maybe this is the type of class that you really min-max to make it awesome. And I'm just not having built it and played it, I'm just not seeing the max part of it.
Well, one thing I did notice right out of the gate is that you can be a really ranged shooty evolutionist. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a little bit...
That feels a little puzzling when I think about somebody who's changing their body around. But I feel like it'll be very satisfying in play. Have you seen a lot of the Solarians that get the solar shooty weapon?
Oh, man. I we were just playing the game earlier today, and we're at ninth level, and the Solarian, the solar flare, is really pretty cool. You know, one of the things he was doing was a ranged disarm attack, you know?
Ooh, neat.
Yeah, it's like, wow, you can do that. And he's got, you know, other really cool stuff, you know, both the Solarian-based and what you could do as a ranged Solarian. So I actually thought that was kind of neat. And again, that came about after I had created my Solarians. And so I would have to make another one to do that. But it's like, wow, this is much more versatile, you know, than some of the stuff I have. And the Solarian's already super versatile, so...
And that's not something that you frankly would have used.
That's not an adjective you would have used to describe a Solarian right out of the core rulebook, I don't think.
As they get to higher level, they can do more stuff. I mean, in our home game, we are just starting to touch on some of those things, I think, in our podcast game.
I think that might be right. I think that might be right. Some of the neat teleportations and stuff like that.
Right. I think that a Solarian in Dawn of Flame is hamstrung a little bit by the fact their cool blow-up power isn't going to work on anybody. So,
well, there's a lot of cool fire-based stuff that doesn't work very well. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing, so about the solar flare individuals, he was actually doing cold damage with it.
That's so neat. That's really neat.
You know, so there's, I have no idea how he was doing that. That's one of the things I need to ask him. But, you know, it seems like there's, again, it's additional versatility. With this, with the evolutionist, on the surface, it seems like it wants to give you versatility in terms of the character you create as you're leveling up. But in a day-to-day context, it's kind of locked in. You're not super versatile in that regard, though.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like you might be onto something there. And I wonder how it would play. And maybe the only way, I guess that's part of the problem with the armchair theory crafting that we're doing, having read it, is it's really important to sort of jump in and see this in play.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not just play it yourself, but really... see lots of different versions of it. This is one of the things that I've really enjoyed, you know, doing a lot of conventions the past couple of years, is I've seen a lot of really cool biohackers, vanguards, and witch warpers doing some really awesome stuff that's got me much more excited than when they first came out.
Yeah, that I can definitely see that. Although there's a little bit of appeal here. I think that I've never seen a class that makes me want to play a Xeno Warden type character until this evolutionist. And now I'm like, you know, a human with the vital niche who's like, you know, sort of just, you know, pro Xeno Warden things and protecting the wild and the environment because you embody the wild and the environment.
Right.
That could be kind of fun.
Well, and honestly, maybe that's where this is going, is that this isn't designed for somebody to fill some mid-match niche, but this is like, this is your pure role-play class, you know? You want to grow up to be a construct, to become undead, to become a fae or dragon, you can do it with this. And you can role-play that whole process.
And go all the way through. You know, maybe so. Maybe so.
Yeah. I don't really... And the thing is, it's like... And I don't know where this is going to end up, you know, like... Looking at the nanosite with the dex-based, the precog with the dex-based caster, it's like, that's not going to stick around.
Right. That is a test balloon. That is plainly a test balloon to see what people are going to think. And when people flip out, they'll not.
Yeah. But when I look at this, it's like, you know, maybe this is the low end. Maybe people are going to see that, oh, you know, we wanted to try some things and they didn't really show up. So we're going to buff everything up by a whole bunch. You know?
I don't, maybe so.
Yeah.
I guess I guess we'll see where they go with it.
Yeah. I don't know if that ever happens where they think something is underpowered in a playtest.
It's happened a few times in Pathfinder playtests, I've noticed, where they expect something to be awesome and it just kind of isn't. And they're like, well, obviously we need to do something else with that.
Yeah.
Make it a little tougher.
Well, I have at least one of all the other character classes and two of most of them. So that means when these come out, I got to try it. So I'm excited about the Nanocyte actually a lot. I think that sounds really neat.
I'm actually a little more excited for the precog than the Nanocyte myself. And that's not just because the zero level precog damage dealing power. Every class has their own kind of unique damage dealing power. I wrote the one for the precog, which is kind of exciting. But I think that the concept of, you know, looking forward into the future, that kind of diviner, I guess I'd say aggressive divination, I think is something that I find really appealing.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we'll have to wait for all of these. So the precog, do we know when that one's coming out? I don't think that's been announced.
That is Galactic Magic.
And okay, it was announced in there? I wasn't sure.
Yep. Now, this evolutionist, the thing that's interesting about it is they haven't said anything about what it's coming out in.
Right.
It's just, here's a playtest class. Mm-hmm.
So we know that
I know, but I'm not saying.
Yeah. So, but the Nanocyte's coming out with Tech Revolution, and that's coming out soon. That should be really soon, like this month. Is that right?
I think so. And then Galactic Magic is later this year, I think.
Right. I think it got pushed back to December.
Okay. Boo. Okay.
I know. I think it was November, then it got pushed back to December. There's the whole shipping thing that's going on.
Oh,
and then that means this one is got to be coming out in an unannounced hardcover sometime, probably March is my guess.
I acknowledge your speculation.
Yes. And I believe I know the unannounced hardcover because I think I worked on a bunch of that, but I didn't know this was in it.
Surprise, do some work on it, but we're not going to tell you what's going to be in it until...
That's how secretive it is. Yeah, so... Yep. All right. Well, that'll be fun. It's different because the other three came out together in the character operations manual.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that they've been very well. The character operations manual is exactly the kind of thing where you would expect a whole bunch of different new classes, right? Where three classes wouldn't surprise you. Mm-hmm. But you can see that this is our big tech book. You get one tech class. This is our big magic book. You get one very magic focused class. That kind of thematically fits.
And then this is going to come out in an evolutionary book.
That's right. It's going to be all about how to really change your game and really up your game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I look forward to it. So, you know, I was kind of down on this class before we started talking. Now I'm thinking maybe one of these niches will be something I would try.
I'm feeling exactly the same. I'm like, Starfinder Monk, you can do that way better with the, with Soldier or with Vanguard or with, frankly, you want the mystic part of it, you take a Solarian. But no, now I'm starting to think this has like its place, and I think that could be a lot of fun. I'm also looking forward to seeing what this can do.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's great getting back at it, and I'm sorry we had to change the format while you were gone. So I hope it works out.
I'm back. I'm going to do this next time too. You won't get rid of me so easy.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.